To what extent is this a political victory for the Congolese government?
Well, it's certainly a military victory, and I can tell you the turning point that this marks within at least the psychology and perception of the Congolese public is considerable. For an army that has been a source of humiliation, that has been a source of shame, to be able to declare that they defeated probably what is perceived as the most important, the most threatening armed group in the eastern Congo is a huge psychological boost for the Congolese army, but also for, I think, people in the Congo. So it's a significant psychological shift. It's a military victory. Politically speaking, I think it's definitely going to boost President Kabila in terms of his own legitimacy, in terms of his own power base. I think that what it is not, certainly, is peace in the eastern Congo. This is a small part of what needs to be done in terms of stabilization in the eastern Congo. This is one of what is now estimated to be probably around 50 different armed groups in the eastern Congo.
The M23 has said that they'll pursue their goals through purely political means. How likely is it that they'll be successful in this?
Extremely unlikely. This was basically the president of the movement was flown to the negotiation table in Kampala, rather, and told basically sign or that's it for you guys. He signed the peace deal. He signed that declaration after his military movement had already been defeated. So he had no other choice to say what he said. They may convert themselves into a political party. I believe they're free to do so now. But the M23 isn't popular anywhere on the Congolese territory, and the political future is extremely bleak.
Is the Congolese army now going to go after the FDLR?
That's what they say, and I think that would be an important part of the puzzle. There was a lot of pressure brought to bear on the Rwandan government to stop supporting the M23, and a lot of the pressure involved promises made by diplomats that the next group to be tackled, or one of the next groups to be tackled, in short course would be the FDLR. So I think in terms of the larger diplomatic gambit, that would be important, and that indeed is what some members of the United Nations have been saying. So we'll have to see. The FDLR is also an extremely difficult group to tackle. Unlike the M23, they're not going to stand and fight. They will probably flee into the jungles. They will target civilians, use civilian deaths as leverage. And so the operations will probably be complex and very thorny.
So you would agree then that if Kagame dropped the M23, he obviously had some kind of assurances that the Congolese would then go after the FDLR?
First of all, there's never been an explicit dropping. It's what we can conclude from what we see in the field, where the Rwandan government did not provide support in this last round of fighting to the M23. And so there was a lot of pressure obviously brought to bear on Rwanda. But also there were assurances given that some of the concerns of the Rwandan government would be addressed. Now, those negotiations were never explicit negotiations. And never, to my knowledge, in those negotiations, even behind closed doors, did the Rwandan government ever say that it had an interest in the eastern Congo that it was trying to defend. So whatever promises were made in sort of an offhanded fashion. It wasn't an explicit deal that was done with the Rwandan government.
Will the Congolese army win against the FDLR?
It's a very difficult operation. The FDLR is spread, estimated to be someplace between 1,500 and 3,000 soldiers spread across an extremely large area, based often relatively well integrated into the local population. It's a force that knows the terrain extremely well. They're not going to stand and fight. They'll withdraw into the jungles and then carry out targeted guerrilla operations, either against the Congolese army and the UN, or in particular against the civilian population. And so the operations would be best conducted with targeted strikes on command posts, command centers, and the command of the FDLR. And for a Congolese army that's just beginning to get to its feet, to reestablish itself, to gain a modicum of internal discipline and coherence, those would be very challenging operations.
Who or what does the FDLR now represent?
They represent themselves. I don't think the FDLR, even perhaps some of the more radical members of the Rwandan opposition may have some links with the FDLR, may have a certain amount of support, but I think the vast overwhelming majority of the Rwandan public and diaspora, as well as the Congolese public certainly, has absolutely no sympathy or support for the FDLR. They're perceived as abusive. They are perceived as occupiers here in the eastern Congo, and I don't think that there's going to be too many tears shed if the FDLR is dismantled.
You then don't think that they have some kind of political or ethnic representation?
Well, they certainly have an ethnic representation in the sense to the extent that they are overwhelmingly Hutu. They have political demands that they are making, but they have lost a lot of their legitimacy, obviously, if they ever had any. They have a certain amount of links with some of the opposition members in Rwanda, but they're very tenuous. They're almost never explicit, and overwhelming majority of the Rwandan opposition, at least the more legitimate Rwandan opposition in exile or in Rwanda, has denounced the FDLR and their tactics.
Thank you very much to Jason Stearns from the Rift Valley Institute speaking to us from Kinshasa.
Thanks. Thank you.